been told by the citizens, access to health care is a right, and you guys need to figure out how to do something about it. So I think it's a practical beginning to solve the problem of the state. Now, incidentally, let me put a footnote in. I don't think we should be dealing with this on a state level. I think basically this should be dealt with at a national level because it's too complicated.
Good, then we can take this bill off the table.
Well, we could if we believed it was going to be dealt with at a national level. In 1914, they tried it at the national level the first time. In 1935, they tried to deal with it. Roosevelt and the Murray Wagner Dingell bill. In 1950, President Truman tried to deal with it. In 1972, the best proposal of all was Bob Packwood's proposal, which the liberals fought because
Packwood's suggestion.
Because it was Packwood's suggestion, yeah. Well, it was a part of President Nixon's proposal for guaranteed annual wages, which caused a little problem. It was the FIP of FAP. So in 1993, we tried it with the Clintons. We're hearing about it again in 2008. If I believe the federal government was going to solve this problem, then I would say, great, take the bill off the table. I don't. So consequently, there are now 22 states trying to work with it in a variety of different ways, trying to work with exactly the same issue, because they're all trying to create the model that will show the way to do it when we get to a federal. I think we just have to do something, because I don't believe it's going to be solved on a federal basis.
Thank you, and I respect your opinion, and you know that I wholeheartedly disagree. Nonetheless,
I do. And I respect that.
And that's fine, because I think we need to have this ongoing dialogue. So, you would agree with me, however, that the issues, whether they're one, two, or three of the four strands in your ball of yarn, are being addressed by the state legislature by virtue of activities going on with work groups, task forces, or required by certain pieces of legislation, all without the voice, as you say it, of the people expressing this as a constitutional right.
Yeah, and part of the reason they've been limping along and we've been trying to do it over the years is because we haven't had clarity on the extent to which it really is our obligation to do it. No, the 329 process is the main process that's, you know, the Oregon Health Fund Board is the main process that's systematically trying to look at it. The others are marginally trying to look at it, and we're among them in this committee. I mean, we'll be trying to do some things on all of these issues. Yeah, I think in order for us to seriously address it, we are going to try and address it. I think this issue would illuminate the way we address it. It will give us a different perspective on how to address the issue.
I'll probably have further comments, but I'll save those for my precatory language to the vote.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. I don't know if this is better addressed with you as a witness or you back in the chair seat. I'll do it now, and maybe I've got it wrong. When we looked at the same,
you're slightly constrained from the chair.
You have more flexibility there. Maybe that's better.
Yeah.
When we looked at HCR 18 back in the 07 regular session, if I recall correctly, it passed out on a straight or a near straight party line basis, and then went over and went to the Senate, and I think was there, still there in committee upon sine die, if I recall correctly. Okay, so it died in committee over there. I guess I have absolutely no illusion that an issue like this would come back at some point, perhaps the next regular session. My question with much respect is, why are we looking at this in a special session? With my understanding, from conversations in this committee, broader conversations among the entire legislative body as we're preparing for this unprecedented special session, was that we were not. Let me say this carefully. We were not going to be afraid to attack tough issues. That's not what I'm saying. Tough issues. We're going to deal with tough issues, but we were going to attempt as best possible to not address clearly black and white partisan issues. We were not going to use the special session, and once again I'm saying this with humility and great respect, and I think you know that. We were not going to address issues that for lack of a better way to describe it, are electioneering issues in an election year. Now, I know for a fact that you support this and believe this deep down in your soul. I don't question that for a half second. But I don't see anything that, I'm unaware of any major sea change today compared to where we were back in the regular session, where once again this was a straight party line vote. I'm under no illusion that we'll see it again in some future day. I'm having trouble understanding why we're doing it in February as opposed to January 2009.
Yeah, I need to be a little careful in how I answer this, so I'll do the best I can. When it left the House and went to the Senate, it got into the Senate Rules Committee. And I actually had the votes in the Senate to get it out of the Senate. There were a variety of political concerns extrinsic to this bill, not around this bill, but extrinsic to this bill, that kept it bottled up in the Rules Committee of the Senate. When I went to the leadership of the Senate and urged them to move it out, they said that they would rather deal with it in the February session. I said, well, that's a little chancy business in dealing with it in the February session. He says, we don't know what the rules are in the February session. We don't know how this is going to go. And they argued that they would prefer to deal with it in the February session. So after a series of negotiations between the House and the Senate leadership, there was agreement that we would address it in the February session.
Can I follow on that real quick? Let me just ask you, do you think that's still a... I understand that may have been what you discussed in June of 2007. Based on the precedent that we've established from June to now almost February for this unprecedented session, do you think that's still a correct analysis? Once again, I'm not suggesting this is you, in fact, I'm not suggesting it's anybody, but it's an election year, and this is clearly going to be an electioneering issue.
Well, I hope it's not going to be an electioneering issue. And I've certainly avoided making an electioneering issue, and I hope it continues to avoid being an electioneering issue. Yeah, but I would say commitments make a difference to me, as some of you have known, and in terms of my own behavior towards others and expected behavior of others toward me. And I believe I have a commitment that we will at least be addressing it in the February 8th session, because there are some real reasons to make sure it's in the November 08 ballot. So I'm not assured that I necessarily have the votes to pass it, but I do believe I have a commitment to address it in this session, and we'll be, I hope we have the votes to get it introduced here, and then I hope we have the votes to get it out of committee, and I hope I have the votes to pass on the floor. I don't have any assurance that I do have the votes to get it off the floor, but I do have assurance to address it. And I really hope this doesn't turn into an electioneering issue. It could, but I hope not.
Thank you.
Other questions? Representative, since we're looking at these bills and you're proposing them, I think that I'm duty-bound to ask the questions that we would of anyone.
Please.
What is the fiscal for this type of amendment? It's one thing to approach the people with a moral and philosophical survey question and say we have widespread support. It's another thing to deal with what's it going to cost Oregonians to implement this proposal. You know, how many people are uninsured? You know what we're dealing with in the state. What's the fiscal for this?
Well, first let me ask it specifically. The fiscal is none. I mean, all this bill requires is the legislature to create a plan. The fiscal comes when they create a plan, and that will have a fiscal with it. This does not create a fiscal. But the practical answer to me is, when you look at least at the national models on what it takes to do a variety of things, a single-payer system, a X, Y, or Z system, and you model the cost over a decade, and you model the cost of doing nothing, the cost of doing nothing is the most expensive option. I believe if we don't do something like the 329 process, like the plan that that will be created, the cost of the healthcare system over the next decade will increase. And anything we do will end up costing the healthcare system, the state of Oregon, less money. But the fiscal for this itself is nothing. The fiscal for this itself is indeterminate because the fiscal depends on what plan you create.
Are you aware of a definition for what is inclusive in the word or the term healthcare?
In the term effective and affordable health care?
No, just...
No, but this is effective
itself.
And affordable health care.
Healthcare itself, what is included? I mean, affordability depends on what's included. And so what is the definition of healthcare?
But healthcare is not here as an unspecified term. It's effective and affordable health care. And there are ways to define that.
All right.
Which is probably less than we're now spending on health care.
Does it include abortion?
Does health care include abortion? Well,
would health care be
included? We don't include abortion, for example, in the Oregon Health Plan right now. So, that's a decision as to whether it's an included benefit or not.
What do you mean it's not included?
Well,
it is included.
Yes. Okay. I think that's a decision that's being grappled with right now, for example, in the Benefits Committee of the Oregon Health Fund Board. If you're talking about if I'm defining it, does it include abortion? Absolutely.
Okay. How about?
But that doesn't mean that's what will come out of the plan.
The goal of this legislation is to send to the people an opportunity to vote on terms that presently are not defined. And so I'm trying to get some idea for us as we consider whether we should vote in favor of this going forward or not. What is intended? Does it include early termination of life, assisted suicide? I mean, is that part of health care and dignity, which is referred to here?
I'm saying that depends on the definition of the plan and who defines it. If you're asking if I have the magic wand and define those things, I've supported all those things all my professional life, and I will continue to support them, and would argue for them in the development of the plan. This constitutional amendment does not define that.
All right, we have some other comments when we have a motion.
Great.
But are there any other questions? No, there's not.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President.
We have a motion.
We need to close.
Close. Okay, close. Close the public hearing on LC 88 and LC 91 and open a work session on LC 88 and LC 91. And Madam Vice Chair, can I?
Mr. Chair.
Second motion.
Second motion.
91.
Have a separate motion each?
Two separate motions.
Okay.
Which would you like first, Mr. Chair?
91.
Mr. Chair, I move that LC 91 be recommended for introduction at the February 2008 special session.
Aaron, could you see if we could get Representative Cannon? Thank you. We have a motion on the floor for introducing LC 91 into the February special session. Let's open the floor for discussion.
Mr. Chair, could we stand at ease until all that would be voting on this are present for the discussion?
I think that's a good idea. We will stand at ease.
LC 91.
You were so good.
You can assume what you said was in the record.
We have, of course, a representative democracy, and it seems like for political purposes on both sides, whenever representation is ineffective for accomplishing one's goals, the goal is to forget the representative part of it and make it just a democracy, where we send it out to the people and get the people to vote on something based on a very limited and prescribed explanation maybe in sound bites or what's ever in a voter's pamphlet. And yet we have been elected to determine not only the social and philosophical and moral aspects of an issue, but also the political and the financial aspects of it. And in this instance, when we're talking about amending the Constitution to make a fundamental right for health care, everyone who has an interest in a program in the state should be very concerned about this, because it gives a primary role for health care without describing how it's going to be paid for. We know the cost is huge, and it's true it doesn't prescribe a way for it to be paid or what the system will be, but in reality, we're going to assure as a legislature, if this were to be passed, that health care would be a fundamental right. Now, we have had surveys of the people that indicate they like all of the benefits that are currently provided. But then when you tie that into a question about will you pay additional taxes to fund it, everything changes. And so based on Measure 28 and Measure 30 and just our own experience in our own districts, tax increases are not favorably looked upon. And so now we're going to end up, and I believe an unintended consequence if this were to go through and pass is it would become part of the Constitution. It will be very expensive. The cost, regardless of who pays it, and somebody's going to have to pay for it, is, you know, to provide health care for another 600 and some odd thousand people, you know, which are currently uninsured, and whatever else would be included with providing health care for all Oregonians, it's going to have to come from somewhere. And so there could be attempts to pay for it with tax increases. In all likelihood, based on our experience, they won't pass. And so now we as a legislature will be put into a position where we have to fund this fundamental right out of budget revenues that may have been more, at least previously, appropriated to children's programs, to educational programs, to law enforcement, to judiciary, to elderly programs, to any other aspect that is involved in the state budget that isn't specifically a fundamental right, because we are creating health care as a privileged right, and all other aspects of the budget that are not in that same category will be subject to losing funds so that there is sufficient funds to accomplish what this is intended to accomplish. And so once again, good intentions will become the victim to the realities of implementation and unintended consequences. We've made kind of, you know, jokes about, wouldn't it, if we're going to do health care, then shouldn't we also have constitutional guarantees for food and clothing and shelter, like is suggested by the United Nations proclamation. And all of those things sound good, but we have a problem, and I'll conclude with this, and that is we seem to be interchangeably mixing philanthropy with government mandate, and they're much different. When you have a clinic, whether it's by a church or a group of people or a group of foundations, when they provide health care, it's done because it's the right thing to do. But when the government says you shall do it, then it's a question of who's going to pay for this. And the answer is, well, you are, whoever you is, meaning whatever basis of population, the tax of the taxpayers. And what happens if I don't agree with this? Then we, using the power of the government, will come and take your money from you, or we will put you in jail. Government is about power. It's about compulsion. And so when we pass a law that
was about 36 votes,
the consequence is that what is philanthropy to one person who says we really should use the government to do this is a takings from other people. And that's a huge, huge step, and it's a heavy burden that we have, and we should wield that sword very carefully. And because of the consequences of this, I think that it's ill-advised that we would pass this measure in this special session especially, and that it is a controversial issue that we should not go forward with until we've heard from the outcome of Senate Bill 329. And even then, a constitutional amendment guaranteeing health care, whether it's indirect or direct, is something that I believe would be inappropriate for us to pass.
Representative Kotek?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Flores?
Just a couple brief comments. I think it's completely appropriate to send to the voters a question about what they value, and that's what this measure is about. In terms of how we define health care, there are many ways to define that, obviously, but that's why we have the courts if we can't come to some conclusion. You know, if our founding fathers were sitting there debating how we define life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, I'm guessing they never would have put in the Declaration of Independence. There are a lot of aspects of this that I think voters should discuss. I think they are smart enough to figure it out whether or not this is something they want to do. And in terms of the urgency issue, we can talk about the route to which this came before us in this session, but I think actually with the passage of Senate Bill 329 in the 2007 session, there's actually more place for this now to say we are if this passes, the voters say yes, we believe that health care is a right, it should be in the Constitution, that we believe that the legislature should set up a plan. And I don't believe it's saying how much we should spend. It says come up with a plan that makes sense. We are going to have a recommendation in front of us next year. If this passes, it will be our obligation to do something and pass something, a plan that works to provide effective and affordable health care. And to me, that means for myself as an insured person, I want to make sure that my health care is quality, that I have a doctor who has, you know, been approved by the state. It's more than just meeting the needs of the uninsured, I believe. This is a broader discussion. And I think it makes perfect sense to move this on and take it before the voters if we can.
Representative Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I perhaps should end, but we'll start by a quote from P.J. O'Rourke. If you think the cost of health care is high now, you should wait and to see what it will cost when it's free. Hmm. And I understand that your proposal is not all government all the time, but invites other participation, private, and so on and so on. However, I think there's a lot to consider here that doesn't meet the test or answer many of the questions that voters in November of 2002 said no to by a statewide overwhelming percentage of 70% when being asked to consider another universal health care proposal. And I think that you had a hand in that one as well. You voted no. Okay, well, then, good. It's good to know. Good that you're on the record. And then, as we do the discussion about...
Actually, let me say it correctly. I opposed that and ended up voting yes.
Because it was an element.
Because I didn't want 70%, which I knew was going to come. I wanted to be one less than 70% voting yes.
But I did oppose it.
Well, I was never
for it. That was before he was against it, or before he was for it.
I opposed to it.
If we're talking about, you know, somewhat frivolously, I guess, considering food, housing, or clothing, and now health care as a right, I guess to whatever extent you would consider what level of food, housing, clothing, and health care as a right, or the quality thereof, if you lived in Cuba or Camelot, that would work. We don't. We live in Oregon. We live in the United States of America. And I guess I just have a hard time suggesting that our founders and framers of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights had this envisioned as a right. So I stand opposed to that again. Voters deserve to know what they're buying into. And I think just saying the value statement of a right does not give them the knowledge that they are setting up a framework that can cost up to $12 billion. I think we saw an estimate of that a couple of years ago. And that was a couple of years ago. $12 billion a year. So then we have the discussion that was suggested earlier of preempting what other services that the state is required to provide, whether it's education, public safety, or who knows on the gamut of services that the state already is required to provide. It seems to be giving a blank check for health care. And there are no guarantees that it would slow the rising cost of health care. I think that the discussions that are going on now are working to address that. I don't know that the value statement, is and I'm using the terms that you have given us, provides any more to that discussion. I would like to make a comment in regard to the political element here. I heard a statement earlier from one of our testifiers that I hope I did a good job of not coming out of the saddle or letting my head spin around, but it was said for the folks who believe in health care. Well, that statement already is politicizing this whole discussion, because we all believe in health care, and we all believe in the access for those who do not have it. We divide on how we get there. So if we don't think that's a politicizing of this issue, I think we're digging our heads and holes into the ground.
I think what she says is right. I don't think there's anybody in the committee that believes people shouldn't have access to health care when they need it.
I think there are other areas that, again, in the realm of unintended consequences, could raise its head. I think that if the bureaucracy is the state is heavily evolved in this particular plan, whatever it is that's crafted, I think we'll see a rising, not a lowering of costs, and then we have the impact on providers who are going to be unwilling to provide services, and once again, seeing providers leave the state, we're already facing that. Do we need an improvement in the healthcare system? Absolutely. I don't think this particular piece, whether it's 91 or 88, get to that. And lastly, Mr. Chair, I would just say that I'm sure you are aware that in San Francisco and New Mexico, universal health plans have come up against the federal law. The Employee Retirement Income Security Account statute that's been in place since 1974, ERISA, and the Ninth Circuit has had some complexity. Everyone involved in those discussions in the various states that are contemplating universal health care package, see it in the Supreme Court in the very near future. I don't think we should put Oregon on that same track. I guess, as you can tell, this is very much of an emotional issue for me, only because, lastly, I think I expressed to you last time that we came together, I was concerned about this bill, which is not without its complexities, certainly not without controversy, and as the vote will likely come out today, not a consensus piece. And then furthermore, the process of bringing it to the 08 session, which I feel by its very nature hijacks the process of what we're supposed to be going into this 08 session to demonstrate, caused me great concern, and I will be voting to oppose this. Thank you. With all due respect, Mr. Chair.
Councilman Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Representative Bruin was before me, but I'd be happy.
Go ahead. Let me.
That's fine.
I assume we'll give everybody a chance to make a statement, so.
That's fine.
Who was with you on the phone?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, Representative Kotek made some of the points that I was going to make about this is a very different situation than if we were passing this as a bill. We're asking the voters, we're asking the people of Oregon to make this decision about what they want to consider a fundamental right. And maybe the founders, we don't know if what they envisioned. I do know that under Article 1, which is the Bill of Rights, they say that they say all men, all people, all Oregonians, have at all times the right to alter, reform, or abolish the government in such a manner as they may think proper. And that's part of our Bill of Rights. If the people decide that they want to alter the government, that's up to the people of Oregon. And in fact, you can see in this draft, LC 91, a new section 46, there are already 45 sections under our Bill of Rights, including such thing as victims' rights, work for inmates, whether you can sell liquor by the glass. I really do believe that the people of Oregon, I asked this question when Mr. was it Bolton and Mr. Buckstein were up here, about who gets to decide what a right is. Obviously, there's not agreement on that among people, because Representative Greenlick and many of us believe that health care is a right, and some people don't believe that it's a right. Well, my question is, who gets to decide that? And we're talking about for Oregonians amending the Oregon Constitution. It's up to the voters of Oregon to decide, and that's why I plan to support this. I know that there's some concern about what a plan is, but that's what is going to be determined after this is passed. Assuming that it's passed, then it will be the job of the legislature to come up with a plan. And I asked the question about Massachusetts. Would that satisfy the plan? And I think I'm fairly comfortable knowing that if this is in the Constitution, it will be something that the legislature, if the voters pass this, yes, the legislature will make it a priority, but that's up to the voters. If the voters want this to be a priority, they will have their say at the ballot. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't want to belabor all these points that have been well addressed. I have two major reservations about these two LC drafts. The first one is simply that we should be addressing this in the 2008 special session. I mean, we're going into a session that's unprecedented, as I mentioned before. I think the people of Oregon with that want us to be efficient. They want us to get in, get out. It doesn't mean they don't want us to tackle tough issues, but I'm not sure that but I do think they want issues of public safety. I think budget issues are real issues, but this issue, not that it's not a real issue, but seems to me that it's not one that well suits itself to an unprecedented special session. The other one for me is more fundamental, and it basically it boils down to, I think we have an opportunity lost with looking at this. I appreciate the discussion on rights that was given by both the arguments, the testimony in favor and the testimony in opposition about defining a right and defining an affirmative or a positive right versus the opposite of that. I have to admit that I fall down on the camp that it makes me. It makes me nervous when we start talking about rights that demand something from me. Money, I mean cash, an asset obligation. That's troubling. It's not to say it's not a worthy conversation to have, but I think that, as has been well said, a slippery slope. But where I see the opportunity lost is this. Where we've already demonstrated in 2007 that this is a black and white bipartisan issue when it comes to defining this as a right, I think we are almost just as close as establishing and understanding that the majority, and I don't want to put a percentage on it, but a high majority of the legislature, both parties, fundamentally believe that universal access to health care is a responsibility of us as legislators. It's us as a state to find a way to do that. I think there are ways to, and let me define that real quick. If Dennis Richardson did not have health insurance, I do not think it's his right to have me give him health insurance, but I do think it is my responsibility to find a way that he gets health care, health insurance, whatever, however we define that. That's how I view the role as a legislature. I think we have a fundamental responsibility to provide, to find a way to find universal health care for Oregonians. I've been on record many times talking about Massachusetts and California and the ideas they're looking at there. We've got Senate Bill 329, I think it was, that we discussed earlier. Those are all methods to get there, and those are all highlighting the fact that most of us, the majority of us, I would argue, think that finding health care is a responsibility. I think we have a great opportunity, even within the mechanism, the model of these two LCs, constitutional amendment, to say it is. The legislature says, we agree, it's our responsibility to find a way to get every Oregonian, to get health care access for every Oregonian. That I think we get pretty close to universal agreement on. What we're not going to get universal agreement on, especially in a special session, is the black and white partisan issue that, and I know it's not your intent, Mr. Chair, I know it's not your intent at all, but will be used for electioneering purposes by folks outside of the legislature in an election year. So that's why I stand in opposition.
President Maurer, President Gelser?
Yeah, this is Representative Maurer, and can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. My battery is going low after this long session. So if you lose me, you may have to call me back on my cell phone, Sandy.
Okay.
my point is that that no matter how you parse it out, this is just an entitlement program. And this, you know, we've sent it to the voters before. They've said no. When it gets sent out again, they're going to vote no again. And where do we go from there? You know, what message does that send? You know, in my district, this dog just doesn't hunt. And for me, it's an easy vote. So I'll sum it up by saying I can't support it, and I won't support it going forward.
Sam Gelser?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for bringing this back to us. I'll be supporting the introduction of this measure today. And I think on the issue of whether or not it becomes an election year issue or a political issue, I think in the first point that I would make is, for me personally, I believe and have no doubt that this is an issue that its sponsor, Representative Greenlick, brings forward in a very genuine kind of way, and I didn't hear a suggestion of that otherwise. But I don't understand the argument that we shouldn't move it forward because it might be an election year issue. When we put something on a ballot in an election year, we have an election about it, and therefore we are going to be talking about it in a political arena, and I think that's what we do, and I think that that's appropriate. I think that it is appropriate to give Oregon voters the opportunity to weigh in on this. I know that access to health care is probably one of the most frequent topics of discussion that I hear from people in my district. I also know that overwhelmingly the people in my district were very supportive of the Archimedes movement and are probably more than a lot of other districts in the state eager to move forward faster to universal access to health care. So I'll be supporting the introduction today and look forward to our next hearing on this issue when we have a public hearing on the bill.
Thank you. Representative Cannon, you have a comment?
Well, just I'm very sorry that I've missed so much of the discussion on this, because I think nothing could be more interesting, honestly, than hearing the impressions of this very able committee, and yet a committee with very different perspectives on this issue around this question. I think it's a conversation that Oregonians should engage in, and that's why we'll support the introduction of this measure that would, if passed, refer the question to Oregonians for passage. So I will be supporting it.
Thank you, sir. I just have a couple of comments. One is, I really believe this ought to be in the Constitution, and that gets us into the representative, as opposed to a direct democracy. Unfortunately, the only way we can amend the Constitution, which I think is a problem, is by a vote to the state. That's why I supported the bill to have a constitutional convention to redo the Constitution. I invite you all to join me in this in the 2009 session. This may not be a bipartisan issue. Actually, it may be a bipartisan issue. Both parties may object to it. But the fact is, if you want something in the Constitution, there's only one way to do it, and that's the vote of the people, either by initiative or referral. I really, again, urge people. I'm really intrigued, and I'm not sure how to deal with Representative Bruin's point, which I think is an important one. The second part of Section 46, the first part is declaring the Constitution. The second part is directing the Legislative Assembly to establish by law a plan. It's only a plan for a system designed to provide every legal resident of the state with effective and affordable with access to affordable and effective health care, which, as you said, the legislature is willing to do. So the extent to which that's true, and I think we could argue by the strong support for Senate Bill 329, the legislature was ready to at least let's try and get a plan together that we can look at. This establishing the right doesn't do anything if that's the case other than what would be done anyway. I mean, it would tell us, okay, put up and shut up. And it seems to me that's an important issue. I'd also like to comment on this $12 billion number, which I'm not sure where that came from. As I understand it now, the annual cost of the healthcare system, and Representative Richardson can help me on this, we talked about it in the summer, at that time the estimate was about $17 billion a year for the healthcare system for the state of Oregon. I think the Oregon Health Fund Board is using a number more like $21 billion
for the total cost of health care in the state. If you have 16% of the people not receiving health care in an effective way, but receiving health care in some way, there, that 17% is already contributing something to that $17 to $21 billion annual estimate, and providing them rational access to health care as opposed to the crazy access they get now certainly can't cost another $12 billion. So I mean, I'm just not sure where that number comes from. We ought to be cautious about those numbers. I do think it is clear we'll find when we get the plan from the Oregon Health Fund Board that while most of us believe a rational plan will end up costing less over the next decade, it will certainly cost money to get it moving in the direction it needs. So we will be looking, I think, without doubt, at some kind of revenue increase, and it will be a problem to figure out how to get one that can pass a vote of the people. I do believe whatever we get out of 329 will also go to the people by its nature, and we'll have to. This has been a very interesting debate. As you know, this issue is important to me, and I really appreciate the respect that's been shown to me by the committee. This is a lifelong effort for me, so it is important, and I think the debate is a good one, and I really appreciate it and the questions asked and the testimony on both sides of the issue, which is serious. I'm glad it got Mr. Barton to come down. I hope it won't be the last time. You visit the people's house to express your opinion. It's very important to have opinions expressed, and we take them very seriously.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I would hope that you would switch your lifelong work effort to the OHSU PSU bill.
I'm on that one. I'm on that one, particularly after events over the last week or so, which it seems like
it number one.
Makes that bill
we're
more
good.
Important. And I really appreciate that statement. We have a motion on the floor to move LC 91 for introduction in the February 2008 session. Those in favor of that, please say yes to the roll call. Those opposed, no. Well, first let me ask, is there any objection to moving this forward?
We already have one.
Oh, okay, so there is objection. Okay, then we'll take a roll call.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make sure that this didn't pass without objection.
Unanimous consent.
Yeah, that's what I was checking out. Aaron, please call the roll.
Representative Brown.
No.
Representative
Cannon. Aye. Representative Flores.
No.
Representative Galton.
Yes.
Representative Maurer.
No.
Vice Chair Potent.
Aye.
Vice Chair Richardson.
No.
Chair Green.
Aye. Motion passes. Can I have a motion on
LC 88, please? Mr. Chair, I move that LC 88 be recommended for introduction at the February 2008 special session.
We have a motion before us to recommend LC 88 be introduced in the February 2008 special session. Is there a discussion on ADA? Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, I think that it would be appropriate for you to withdraw this bill completely because it's just another source of contention, since in all likelihood, if it goes through the normal process, it will come back the same wording that it is presently because it's already gone through the process. But what this bill does is it circumvents the process of using the Secretary of State and coming up with a ballot title and an explanation that's deemed neutral and fair by saying that regardless of that process, we're going to determine by a majority vote, even if it's only by one vote, you know, in a partisan issue, what the ballot title and explanation will be. And I think that it's an inappropriate precedent to continue. I didn't like it when we had Measure 49, and I think that there's no reason to do it here, and that it's just one more issue of contention in a supposedly non-contention-focused special session.
Well, let me ask the committee, let me keep this in consideration because of time constraints. Let me ask the committee to vote to move this forward, and I'll take that under serious consideration as it gets to us in the session. I agree with you. I don't think we need to add any more contention. I'll check with LC and see what the precedents are and other things on that. So, yes, I'll take that very seriously. Representative Cote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say I appreciate the clarification that this was the language that came out of Secretary of State's I believe, for the in 2005, I believe.
Yeah, just with slight differences to deal with the difference in the wording of it itself.
Makes sense. I actually think if we were to keep this and to move this particular language, I wouldn't mind seeing line 14 amended to include the modifier of effective and affordable health care. It does show up in the summary, but not in the result of a yes or no vote, simply because I do think that's an important clarification.
And good. And we'll take that up if we continue to push it forward. That'd be great. Are there any other comments on this section?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I would like to make a brief comment. It is my understanding, as you said in your testimony, Mr. Chair, that it is not uncommon for the ballot titles to be written by the legislature when it is a referral from the legislature, that it's the writing by the Secretary of State is for citizen initiatives, not referrals. But that being said, I agree that you'll want to do what you can to avoid controversy, and I don't know what the time frame is for getting a ballot title. So I do encourage you to consider that as a possibility. I'll be supporting this in the event that there isn't adequate time to get a ballot title from the Secretary of State, or for some reason there's a problem with that. But whatever can be done to avoid additional controversy, I think, is in the best interest of passage.
Thank you. Any other comments? All in favor of the motion to move LC 88 forward for introduction in the February 2008 session will respond aye. Opposed, no. Aaron, will you please call the roll?
Aye.
No.
Representative
Cannon.
Aye.
Representative
Flores.
No.
Representative
Gelson.
Aye.
Representative Maurer. No.
Vice
President Kosak. Aye. Vice President. No. Aye. Motion passes. Close the work session on LC 8891. I thank you all for your kind attention to this, these issues today. I'm really happy we've moved 62 along the way, and we can deal with it. Well, I expect we'll get that in the very first week. I can begin to deal with that maybe Thursday. Things will be introduced on the second day, Sandy. Is that right? What's the plan?
Well, the plan has not been articulated and totally made public. They've been meeting frequently. Our understanding is rules will meet the first day, introduce our LCs. Don't know at what juncture our posting requirements will be for the special session. They're still determining that. So depending on our posting requirements and when we actually get the bills might depend on when our actual meeting on this bill will be scheduled. We are, I don't know if our committee knows this, but we meet every Monday through Friday from 3 to 4:30. And I don't recall the room. So
and it's room D.
Is it D?
And it. That's D read. And after the first couple of weeks, my assumption is we'll be moving. First couple of weeks, first week, maybe a little more, we'll be dealing with House bills. I don't think there are too many House bills that we'll have before us, besides the one we've already, the ones we've already talked about, but maybe one or two more. The second week, we'll be dealing, according to the schedule, with Senate bills, and there will be some more of those. There will be a few of those that will come to us. The last 2 weeks, I think it's the Speaker's intention that idle hands are the devil's workshop and wants to keep us working, but from a positive perspective, it's given us the opportunity to begin to do some serious work on the interim agenda we have, and I'm hoping we'll have at least five sessions on interim work, particularly around stuff that's still moving forward on the Health Licensing Act. There are some other interim things that are going on, and it would be great to be having some hearings. If there are some things that you would like to hear hearings of during that time while we're there, we can begin to get those on the agenda. So please let Sandy or me know. We just had a request for an interim hearing on
From OHSU,
yeah, on a bill that they and others in the scientific community want to put forward relating to insurance coverage for subjects of research projects that get health care that they would otherwise get under insurance anyway, even if they're in a clinical trial that provides scientific evidence. I think that's the thrust of what they want to do, and there was some question about trying to move something forward like that.
Mr. Chair?
Yes?
On the list of informational hearings, last committee meeting we had, we talked about possibly including something on access to child abuse and rape and sexual assault assessments in rural parts of the state and some telemedicine opportunities therein.
Sandy, will you have that? You have that on your list? Let's make sure we get. And please, any others of you, probably the easiest way to send an email to me with a copy to Sandy, and we'll make sure we set up hearings for things that Representative Cannon, there was a discussion, somebody talked about your bill that you were mentioning before in testimony to move forward expanded dependency coverage. If you'd like to help organize a hearing on that, this is really a good time to do it, because once we get out of session, it gets relatively expensive to have a committee meeting, and I think they'll probably allow us maybe three more during the interim at most. So the most work we can get done while we're in Salem anyway would be very useful.
Mr. Chair, it doesn't affect me personally, but I would submit that perhaps my fellow members on the Consumer Protection Committee might like to hear Representative Cannon's bill dealing with insurance, since we have had several insurance-related bills there. So I'll let you and Representative Holvey decide.
Yeah, and there isn't any reason not to hear it in both of them. Mm-hmm. What time is that committee meeting in?
1 to 2:30.
I mean, conceivably we could. Yeah. It's going to be hard to try any joint meetings then. Right. We might be able to try some joint meetings later in the interim. That might. I also have some interest in dealing with the question of physicians who have a long-standing relationship with patients who abandon them when they become age 65, and looking into that question. But there are some other things that are going to come. Okay.
I think there's a Beatles song about that, Mr. Chair.
Beatles song. Is that the Yellow Submarine? What's the, why don't we do it on the road? Is that the
No, one? No. No.
That's what it sounds like to me, actually. Thank you all very much. Especially Representative Maurer, you get special credits in your stars in heaven for being here when you're sick. Thank you very much. I'm glad you're not here infecting us for our home. And,
well, it didn't help us on the vote today, Mitch.
And with that, I'll adjourn.